From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Time spent outdoors, both during school and at home, helps children become high-performance learners and score higher on standard tests. That's according to a new report by the National Wildlife Federation. This hour, we discuss the findings of the report in light of the fact that American children spend only minutes a day playing and learning outdoors. We'll hear how schools in Iowa are building outdoor activities into their curriculum, and we'll talk about why time spent in nature increases attention and lowers stress. The benefits of getting kids back to nature. Following this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us here on Iowa Public Radio over the noon hour. Time spent outdoors, both during school and at home, helps children become high-performance learners and score higher on standard tests. Now, that's according to a new report by the National Wildlife Federation. This hour, we want to discuss the findings of that report, also in light of the fact that American children spend only minutes a day playing and learning outdoors. We want to look at how schools in Iowa are building outdoor activities into their curriculums, and we'll talk about why time spent in nature increases attention, lowers stress. Joining us, first of all, for the first half hour, Kevin Coyle. He's Vice President for Education and Training with the National Wildlife Federation. Joining us by phone from Washington, D.C., Kevin Coyle, welcome to The Exchange.
I'm happy to be here.
Tell us about this study. What exactly did you find out?
Well, we found out two basic things. The first is pretty evident that kids who spend a good amount of time outdoors, let's say half an hour to an hour a day, are they're going to actually be better students. They're going to have more attention in the classroom. They're going to be more eager to learn. And generally speaking, they're going to feel better about their learning experience if they have their day broken up with some outdoor time. Mm-hmm. But we also found, and this is a little counterintuitive, that these kids also will do better on statewide tests. You know, there's a big emphasis in public education on kids performing on statewide tests. And the kids who have exposure to outdoor education programs, who are spending more time outdoors, they're actually doing better on these tests as well. So there's good news all around here.
Mm-hmm. What was the methodology used in this study? How was it conducted?
Well, we conducted the study in a very simple way, as we actually went out and did what a researcher would call a literature review. We looked at all of the various studies that have been done really over the last 15 years and began to see a pattern. We collected probably 40 or 50 different studies, some of which looked at environmental education programs, some looked at schoolyard habitat programs. There are a wide range of different things. And what we found out of that was this continuing trend that when kids had more time outdoors, first of all, and then secondarily, when they had some actual educational activities that involved the outdoors or nature, they were doing better in school.
How do you know that is not simply incidental? How do you know that is causing the better scores, the more effective learning attention in the classroom?
That's a really good question. The most of these studies that I've mentioned are what they refer to as controlled studies, meaning that they've drawn a comparison, sometimes in the same school and sometimes in a group of schools. They've drawn comparisons between kids who were not in the programs and how they did, and then kids who were in the outdoor education programs or had more time outdoors and how they did. And they found a pretty consistent pattern, you know, in the 80 to 90% reliability range, that the kids who had the outdoor time or the outdoor education programs were doing better, even though in all other ways that they could measure, the kids were pretty equal.
Mm-hmm. Tried to eliminate all the other possible variables that could explain this. So what's been driving our school kids indoors?
Well, there's a big pattern in the U.S. It's true throughout the world, but particularly in the United States, where kids have just, you know, American childhood has really moved indoors. Here we are at the end of summer, the beginning of fall, and that would have meant in a lot of cases that the children were coming from the outdoors, going to back to school and going indoors. We've called our report, the National Wildlife Federation report that you mentioned at the beginning of the segment, we call it Back to School, Back Outside, because in some ways the outdoor child has become the indoor child in America. And this, the study that we rely on there to look at that pattern comes from the Kaiser Family Foundation, which is based in California. And what they did was they looked at kids throughout the country, ages 8 to 18, and they found that the kids were spending 7 hours and 38 minutes a day watching television, playing video games, you know, on electronics. And when you add that's almost 8 hours a day, there's really not much time left in the waking hours of a kid when you include school. And they're really not spending time outdoors very much. The average kid now is spending about 4 hours a week outdoors, but most of that is organized sports. So there's less than an hour a day of actual outdoor play. And that might sound, to some of your listeners, that might sound really odd to think that, you know, all those hours and hours and hours that we played outdoors is down to really just a few minutes a day. But that's the reality that we're now living with.
Have you found evidence that it's more crucial for kids to spend time outdoors at school as opposed to home, or is outdoors outdoors?
Well, outdoors is outdoors, and it's helpful for schools because what's happened to kids, in addition to spending all this time indoors, is that parents generally are more reluctant to let their kids go out in what I sometimes refer to as engage in free range play, where they just literally get out and run around the neighborhood, you know, unsupervised. Parents are feeling more and more these days that they need to keep an eye on the kids when they're outside. So there's limits to how much time kids can get in home, and we encourage parents to think about giving their kids a green hour every day to the extent that they can. And That would cause some folks to worry because they feel like there's so many demands being placed on parents that they wouldn't have the ability to do that. But we're also asking schools to think about, you know, what a well-rounded student looks like and how they can spend some outdoor time, how they can have some outdoor education programs, get them out of the classroom, get them outside the walls, get them around some greenery, have them learn a little bit about nature. And use all of the various intelligences that a child has, including, you know, physical knowledge and you know, seeing things in three dimensions and so forth.
I wonder if it's I'm convinced of what you're saying, but I wonder too if it's really this screen time that is the problem here. What is the difference, for instance, between some unstructured play time with your box of wooden blocks, which we all had as kids, and making mud pies outside? One indoor activity, unstructured, one outside, unstructured. Wouldn't they be equally valuable?
They're actually not, and it's interesting how this comes through. I think you're right, first of all, that too much screen time, most parents know this, and I think educators know this, too much screen time has an adverse effect on kids. It affects their attention span. Sometimes it makes them learn some things that we don't necessarily want our kids to learn, like violence is a solution to every problem when they're engaged in all these video games, for example. But I think there's another aspect to this. There's an interesting study that was done at the University of Illinois where they compared kids with attention deficit problems, and they basically had these kids go outdoors for certain periods of time, and one group of kids went out and spent time in basically a kind of a paved schoolyard, you know, a place where there were walls and paving. And then the kids were still exercising and playing and moving around. And the other case, they had the kids go out in a park with a lot of greenery and trees and vegetation. And they found that the kids, when they returned, the kids who were in the park actually were much better able to concentrate. There was something literally about the being exposed to nature and greenery that made a huge difference to these kids.
Kevin Coyle is with us, Vice President for Education and Training with the National Wildlife Federation, joining us by phone from Washington, D.C., talking about a new study that shows that time spent outdoors, both during school and at home, helps children become high-performance learners, some score higher on standard tests, as a matter of fact. Kevin Coyle, I want to introduce a couple of other people to our talk here. Mark Kui is a farm manager, a humanities teacher at Scattergood Friends School in West Branch, joining us from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Iowa City. Mark Kui, welcome to our program.
Thanks, Ben.
Also, Mike Todd joining us. He's a science teacher at Ames High School in Ames, joining us from the Iowa Public Radio studios in Ames. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with you, Mike. Tell us about, there's a prairie at Ames High that is used. How do you use it in classes?
Well, it's a prairie remnant, actually. So it's one of the original pieces of prairie that existed in Iowa, and it's a really rare thing in Iowa. Let alone right behind a high school. So we have two classes mainly that get out there, biology and environmental science, a new course, and we get kids out there, assessing the species that exist out there and studying biodiversity and, looking at snakes and amphibians and small mammal trapping and insect surveys.
This is very structured learning, integrating it into learning, actually getting out there, rather than in complement to a textbook, actually going out there, seeing the animals, seeing the plants. Does this surprise you at all, what Kevin Coyle is explaining about this new study?
I think some aspects are pretty, exciting, the standardized test scores and these other things. I think that's, I think the way we structure things, we try to have whatever we design for lessons to achieve as many goals as possible with students, working on other skills besides just concepts, science concepts. And so, gosh, if we can also, do some of these things that he's saying, gosh, that's one more great thing and great reason to be out there, building a foundation of concrete experiences that the students, develop all the science concepts from and really develop a deeper understanding of. So,
how was the experience different for you, Mike Todd, as a science teacher, when you're out there instead of in a classroom, out there actually holding the thing that you're teaching about the animal, the plant? What do you see in the faces of your students outside, the teaching experience that you don't get inside?
Yeah, I mean, a lot more engagement and the kid ask for questions, you get a lot of questions, and they're just so interested in understanding, how these things interact with other things in the environment. And those are questions that drive our studies out there. We do a lot of studies out there. And so, I mean, it's engaging them in things beyond just seeing it, and whatnot. So it's exciting.
Mark Kui, farm manager, humanities teacher at Scattergood Friends School in West Branch. You have a farm at Scattergood's Friends School. Tell us about the farm.
Well, the farm is directly adjacent to the school, and the main purpose of our farm is twofold. One, we try to feed ourselves as much as possible. So we have a 4-acre certified organic vegetable garden. We also raise grass-finished sheep and cows. We have a laying flock, heritage breed pigs, turkeys, all sorts of things that we associate on the production end. And then we are also very interested in trying to create important learning experiences for the students on the Scattergood campus.
And how old are your students? You have them all ages, don't you?
No, high school, grades 9 through 12.
9 through 12, okay. Yep. And what kind of activities are the high schoolers doing out there on the farm?
It's interesting hearing Mike and Ames that they do a lot of formal curricular stuff, and we do a number of that stuff too, and the biology classes and environmental science. But we also have a pretty well-formed informal curriculum in which we have a shared work program, a crew program, in which a lot of the maintenance on the Scattergood campus is done by staff and students working together. So every day, students are out collecting eggs at the chickens, from the chickens, washing those. We have a farm crew. We have a composting crew. So it could be anything from moving portable fences to making sure that all the livestock have the appropriate food and water and stuff like that. The composting crew collects the scraps from the kitchen and makes sure that those end up in the right place. We have a really pretty intricate waste diversion system at Scattergood. So it's not as easy as it may sound, but there are lots of different ways like that. And then students are also just involved in, the mowing and weed pulling and stuff like that around campus as well.
Kevin Coyle, when you hear these two examples from Iowa, from Mark Kui and Mike Todd, this is something that really pre-exists the study. I don't think they need too much convincing. They see it in this students' eyes when they go and work outside here. But how much more of this type of learning activity do we need in this country for our young people?
I think we need a lot more. I mentioned earlier that over the past 8 years or so, there's been a focus on these high-stake tests, you know, that kids take, the idea that they're a lot of the schools themselves in various states are going to be judged on how their students perform on statewide standardized tests. And that's had an effect on schools where it's put a lot of pressure on the teachers and the students to do what they call studying for the test, which is to really focus on, you know, what's going to be in the test and how to take the test. And that's really forced kids in most school systems more indoors. It's eliminated, in some cases, eliminated a lot of the recess time that kids traditionally got. So I love hearing about these programs where the whole basis of the kids' education is to get them outdoors and have them learn about science firsthand and you know, experience everything from science to economics to just, you know, spending more time, because it shows that you can balance, high-performance students and test scores with some of these, more practical and, you know, real-world ways of learning.
You have we have a few minutes left. Kevin, I wanted to make sure we mentioned the program you have called EcoSchools USA. Briefly, what's that about?
Well, it's a program that we've just started in the United States. The National Wildlife Federation just started in the U.S. It's what some people refer to as a green schools program. And it involves greening the buildings, meaning making them more energy efficient, water efficient, greening the grounds. For a lot of schools, that means schoolyard gardens and, you know, more trees and landscaping. And then, of course, greening the curriculum, as we've heard from some of the folks there in Iowa. And the program is really designed so that schools can become examples of good environmental and ecological practice. And in the process of doing that, also encourage kids to get outside the classroom and have more of these kind of hands-on learning experiences.
Okay, but quickly to Mark Kui, you had something to add to what Kevin Coyle said.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to Kevin that I feel at Scattergood we're so fortunate because we're able to sort of disengage from a lot of the high-stakes standardized testing that occurs. And in addition to the Farm Grub program, we also have a pretty involved wilderness trips program. So every spring, our students just take a month off. Our upperclassmen, our juniors and seniors, and some of them are biking back to Iowa from Mississippi. Last year, several of them canoed from the headwaters of the Mississippi down to Minneapolis. And this year, there are going to be some going to the desert southwest. And just knowing that we don't have to spend, you know, those final months of the school year focused on teaching to the test and worried about those tests, I think that really just offers us a freedom that we're able to take advantage of the good weather and just the opportunities that exist outdoors.
Katie is joining us from Carpentersville, Illinois. Katie, welcome to our program. And I understand you run what is called a Silver Eco School. Welcome to the program, first of all, Katie.
Hi, thank you for having me on here.
Yes, tell us about your Eco School.
Well, with Eco Schools, there's, I believe it's 8 different pathways that you can take, and we have decided to really focus on our consumption and waste pathway. So we have an incredible, very efficient, and very comprehensive recycling program inside the school. Every week we have students going out, sorting everything, making very pure products, and we are really working on this Mission Zero Waste that we have going on. So that's kind of our big thing. We're also working a lot on our school grounds, having rain gardens, having composting available, and also including recycling outside.
Interesting. And you're noticing a difference in the enthusiasm, the learning of the students?
Oh, I think so. And, I mean, those are just a couple different ways that we're trying to make the school green, but we do try to get the kids outside a lot. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of water quality monitoring so we can report out to the EPA. And as you were saying, there's such a connection of getting kids outside and making meaningful experiences to increasing our standardized test scores. And I feel like, you know, it's perfect because they're getting some data collection experience and analyzing that data, reporting out, and actually making a difference, you know, creating an action.
Mike Todd, what Katie is saying from Dundee Crown High School in Carpentersville, Illinois, sounds somewhat like what you're doing at Ames High School, doesn't it?
Yeah, a lot of civic, I think, responsibility. I mean, that's a huge skill that we think that students need to develop. And I think stream monitoring, you know, reporting through the iWater program that we do, that, you know, getting kids connected to the community somehow. And we also had actually a project at a pond, a local pond, we would take trips out to during a double period we have every week, and we're, you know, trying to assess the pond. And then we actually, students wrote a $5,000 grant and organized a day to educate the residents about how they impact the pond. And then we're continuing that project this fall and putting in rain gardens in these people's homes that are near the pond. Mm-hmm. So a lot of exciting stuff that, you know, gets taught that's not, you know, standardized test material, but we think it's important for having good citizens, I guess.
Mike Todd, tough budget times for many schools across the country and in Iowa, districts cutting staff, field trips, extracurriculars. Is this an impediment, an obstacle in your program, or is it fairly easy to do with money?
I think we seek a lot of outside funds, so we can't rely on funds that you know, our school district has. So it all has to be, you know, the kids fundraise and other things, or write grants, or I mean it gets them a lot of other experiences, I guess, that are also good. And yeah, unfortunately, I also lost my job last year and got my job back. But yeah, I was in that same boat. I'm one of the, you know, few people that uses the outside resources, and it would have definitely adversely affected our program at Ames High. So.
Got a couple minutes left with you folks, and I wanted to ask, perhaps when we kind of forecast this into the future, think about the kids at these schools now that you're teaching, Mike, that Mark, you're teaching at Scattergood. Does this have wider implications about the type of adults that we get later on in society and the type of politics that we have in terms of our relationship with the environment? Kevin Coyle, tackle that quickly for us.
Well, I think it makes a huge difference. I think that the kids who are involved with the programs that we're hearing about in both in Iowa and Illinois are really better prepared for the world. You know, the kids who can write grant proposals and kids who understand the, you know, the practical application of learning, who have that ability to work together in teams. There's a wide range of benefits these kids get that really does prepare them for a better future.
Mark Quee, do you think about that when you have your kids at Scattergood, what kind of citizens they'll grow up to?
I do, actually. And it's been interesting that recently I've been both pleased and heartened that a number of our graduates have gone on to work at organic farms and start their own farms and stuff like that. So, you know, as the farmer at Scattergood, that makes me feel, you know, really affirmed and mm-hmm. positive.
Mike Todd and Ames, I imagine you see some really formative times, kids actually deciding on careers based on this great experience they're having in Ames High School.
Yeah, definitely a lot more kids interested in natural resources careers. And I think we collaborate with a lot of people on the community net, landscape architects and all kinds of things that they see through this that they could see themselves working outdoors, you know, in their life. And it's definitely changing a lot of kids. I mean, in the beginning, they're very apprehensive to get outside and see a snake. And,
right.
You know, by the end, it's a very different kid. So
excellent. Mike Todd, I want to thank you for joining us from Ames High School. Science teacher Mark Quee of Scattergood Friends School in West Branch. Kevin Coyle, Vice President for Education and Training with the National Wildlife Federation, joining us from Washington, D.C. And also Katie Merva from Dundee Crown High School in Carpentersville, Illinois. Thank you all for joining us. Wish we had longer to talk, but thank you anyway for this conversation.
Thank you. Keep doing the good work, guys.
It was a pleasure.
All right. When we come back, we'll continue with this conversation. Want you to chip in. How much time do your kids spend outdoors at school? What are the obstacles to getting them outdoors? 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Back in just a few minutes. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thank you for joining us over the noon hour. Have you noticed this? Americans are self-segregating, clustering themselves into like-minded communities. And that's according to Bill Bishop. He's the author of The Big Sort. Monday on this program, we'll have a conversation with Bill Bishop in advance of his appearance at Drake University. He says the communities where we live are becoming less diverse, but the country as a whole might be gaining diversity. We'll find out what that's all about Monday on The Exchange. Today, we're sort of taking a jump off from a new report by the National Wildlife Federation that says time spent outdoors, both during school and at home, helps children become high-performance learners. It even makes them score higher on standard tests. In the first half hour, we discussed the findings of that report in light of the fact that American children spend only minutes a day playing and learning outdoors. We looked at how school programs in Iowa are building outdoor activities into their curriculum. However, we know the responsibility for getting kids outdoors and spending more time in nature is shared. Schools may be cutting back on recess or cutting field trips, but families can still encourage outdoors time. And for the remainder of the hour, I want to talk with two people who offer after-school and camp programs for children and families. And we want to ask them about what they do and why they feel it's important. Zach Wiedemeyer from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Iowa City. He's the main teacher and founder of Taproot Nature Experience. Zach Wiedemeyer, welcome to our program.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Also joining us, Linda Nebbe, Assistant Professor of Educational Leadership, Counseling, and Post-Secondary Education at the University of Northern Iowa in Cedar Falls, author of Nature as a Guide, Nature in Counseling, Therapy, and Education. And Linda Nebbe is also a certified wildlife rehabilitator. Linda Nebbe, welcome to our program.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And if people are wondering about that last name, yes, it is true. Linda Nebbe is the host of Talk of Iowa's mother, Charity Nebbe's mother, Linda Nebbe. Welcome to the program. Great to have you with us. Let's start with you. You teach a course at the University of Northern Iowa, commonly referred to as Animal Camp. Tell us about it. Sounds great.
Well, what we do is a little bit different from the academic things that I've just been listening to on the exchange. Actually, the course is an animal-assisted and nature-assisted therapy course. It's 3 credit hours, where our students who are going to be mental health or school counselors learn about the importance of being outdoors and with animals and in a natural environment. And after they spend time learning, then they put that into practice by having a week-long, what we affectionately call animal camp. The animal camp is actually on our property. Since I'm a wildlife rehabilitator, we're surrounded by the wildlife that's in rehabilitation. The students can't interact, but they can see. And then we have domestic animals they can interact with and a lot of really awesome natural area, ponds, woods, for them to be in and explore.
And I understand that the UNI counseling students serve as counselors for some at-risk campers.
Right. We like to service children who have some special needs. Our counselors are all the students in our program. So it's truly a mental health camp. Those are our goals, is to increase self-esteem, to kind of envelop a child in an environment where there's a lot of acceptance and encouragement.
Mm-hmm. So tell us, you teach this, you've taught it for many years, mm-hmm. Animals and nature have an ability to transform us as individuals, even when we have some behavioral problems as youngsters. How can that be? What is behind it?
There is a lot of research, and actually most of it's over the last couple of years, that really support how this tends to enhance us as people. In fact, there's something called the biophilia hypothesis, and let me just read this quickly. It's the biologically based inherent human need to affiliate with life and lifelike processes, and that our identity and personal fulfillment are dependent on our relationship to animals and nature. And without this, we are diminished. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's at the root of our mental and physical health.
We feel it, but what's the science behind that? I know you said there's a lot, but what is in the kernel, what is it?
Okay, looking physically at a person, there's something called the hygiene hypothesis, but it just simply says that there are infectious agents in the natural environment, so when we go outdoors to play in the dirt, we're exposed to them, and this triggers the immune system in our body, which then produces antibodies, making us healthier, making us stronger so that we can fight those infectious agents. If we don't have those experiences when we get older, then our physical body is weaker. Vitamin D from the sun, and we've talked about that our whole lives, that builds strong bones. It does build strong bones, but it also contributes to the regulation of blood pressure, heart rate, strong muscles, and our neurological system. And It's essential in that way. There's a mammalian hormone, oxytocin, and we think about that when we think of new mothers bonding with their babies, that when they nurse them, when they nurture them, when they talk and baby talk to them, mm-hmm. this oxytocin is produced in the mother and in the baby, and it's the bonding hormone. But oxytocin does a whole lot more than that. It again, lowers blood pressure, heart rate, develops feelings of compassion and connection, and is just good for our whole body, our whole immune system. It occurs other times in our life. It occurs when we fall in love, and, you know, you're out in that back road spooning and talking to each other, and you just develop a strong bond. But it also occurs when we pet our dogs and when we work in our garden and develop this closeness and this identity with what we're doing as we nurture those plants.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very, very good for us.
Right.
There's bacteria in the soil that
you've got a long list, Professor Nebbe. I want to go to Zach Wiedemeyer in just a moment.
Sure.
But before we do that, you talked about the science, the studies. Uh-huh. That's very convincing. I want a good example of someone you've seen, an at-risk kid who's come to the acreage outside of Cedar Falls for this animal camp and has been transformed. What have you seen that you can relate to us?
Gosh. We have had two kids, this is just this year, both for different reasons didn't speak. It was a selective mutism in one, the other it was a developmental issue, spoke to the animals, and then spoke to us.
That was the path to getting them to open up to humans, was
absolutely.
First to the animals.
Now, what was happening, I'm not sure, but we see that sort of thing. We had one little boy 2 years ago who was so chronically ADHD, and one of our counselors had observed him in the school and just said, you know, there isn't a moment that goes by that somebody doesn't say something negative. And he actually had a whole week where there was nothing negative in his life. He was surrounded by, you know, the counselor environment and the acceptance, but also he got to run and dig in the dirt, and he could sit for hours and stroke an animal.
Hmm.
Now, I said hours. I should be more realistic. He could sit for many minutes. Okay, and stroke an animal. That just completely something he could focus his attention on.
Linda Nebbe, please hang on for a moment. Zach Wiedemeyer, I'm sure that things that Linda Nebbe is saying strike a chord with you. A lot of this happening at the Taproot Nature Experiences is outside of Iowa City, right?
We do our activities in natural areas, both inside Iowa City and in the surrounding area.
When and why was it founded?
I was an elementary school teacher for 6 years, and loved children and loved to get the natural world into my classroom and my students out into the natural world as much as possible. But found that even as the teacher, I couldn't do it as much, and I found myself staring out the window as much or more as my students,
wishing you were there.
Yeah. Yes. And so my wife knew that I was increasingly unhappy as a classroom teacher with not with the children, not with the teaching necessarily, but with wishing that I had chosen a path outdoors. And that's why we started Taproot.
Okay, you've got a number of programs I see on the website, taprootnatureexperience.org. Several types of programs. What's a program you have for kids?
Our main program is an after-school program. We pick up a different group of children each day at their schools. We have another van. We have two vans and two teachers each day, and we each go on a pickup route, pick up the children, and go on a field trip for the entire afternoon. And then the children's parents pick them up at a prearranged location.
And this is funded how?
The parents pay for this.
Okay, so this is a sort of Taproot Nature Experience. You pay your dues, and your child goes there after school.
That's right. Yep.
And so what is a case study or an example you can hold out for us as Linda Nebbe did there?
I've heard from literally dozens of parents. We've had a couple of hundred kids come through our programs over the last 4 years, and dozens, if not more, parents have said that their children have almost in a matter of weeks have turned around from being having great difficulty focusing, being impolite, just unhappy or difficult in many ways and having serious turnarounds. And the parents attribute it to being in nature. I had one kid who started our program, and I had a hard time tolerating him. He was loud and rude and difficult, and it took him a longer time, but it was clear that he was intelligent. And over week after week, coming once a day or once a week, became it was almost as if the good parts of him, which I could tell were there, but they were underneath the surface, were able to come out. And his parents told me that happened at home as well.
Mm-hmm. And Professor Nebbe, you're saying the explanation for this type of transformation, it lies in this idea, this concept of biophilia.
I think basically that kind of explains the overall explanation of what's happening. The biophilia connection is essential, and when we finally have it, and for a lot of people, especially these kids that do love nature, mm-hmm. but they're finding for them their own identity in that environment, and it's an environment that even if they've been in their neighborhoods or on their playground, it's a social environment. And this is not a social environment. It's them and their relationship with nature. And their self-esteem goes up. They feel better about who they are. They really find kind of a home within themselves as part of this, a meaning, some worth in life. And I think that's really important.
Zach Wiedemeyer, what are the activities, specific activities kids at Taproot Nature Experience have?
Each afternoon we have a sort of a plan, but I'm really willing to let go of that plan or divert from that plan. One of the things I wanted to address in the study was the mention of unstructured play. And so a lot of what Taproot tries to do is give these children time to figure out themselves what they want to do or work themselves with nature and figure out the activities that they do. Mm-hmm. We also I am very proud and happy with the teachers that we have are able to look at the environment and be alert as we go through our afternoon to the lessons that nature puts forward, because nature, the natural world, is full of constantly presenting lessons. And our teachers, one of their jobs is to be alert and notice the lessons that present themselves. And
whether you're visiting a park or a stream or a farm or whatever, so, just be aware. Have your antenna up.
Being aware is a huge part of what we try to teach. Each day or try to do it each day, we spend 5 minutes, maybe even 10 minutes, with the kids sitting in their own spot with no other kids nearby, just being quiet. And we call it checking in with our senses or awareness practice.
Linda and Zach, we're fighting some pretty good societal forces here. We have, parents out there want to make sure their kids are ready for this very complicated world. That's why we're scheduling these kids for all kinds of things, over-scheduling in many cases. Give me the pitch that says, for the worried parent, says, yeah, this sounds great, but unstructured time, I don't know if we can afford unstructured time. What will be the payoff on this investment? Convince us, Linda Nebbe, we need this.
You know, I've fought this battle for years and years and years, and it's a hard one because parents do believe in structured time. It's so hard to let go of that. I think a basic understanding, I mean, we have to educate parents as well. And when you find the answer out, let me know.
Oh, okay, Zach.
I had actually spoke with a teacher, a theater teacher, a few weeks ago who had in his theater program a kid who also was in Taproot. And this child is amazing. She's brilliant and wonderful in so many ways. And he said that after working with her for a few hours in his theater program, he felt like he wasn't able to meet her needs. And he just said, it must be nice to be working with nature as your medium because – and I knew immediately what he meant. Nature is so broad and deep that it meets everyone's needs. And no matter what your needs are, there is something for you in nature. And I think unstructured time with some guidance and safety supervision. That's a large role that I play, is making sure the kids don't hurt themselves. But they will find what meets their needs.
What are the chief obstacles the two of you run into when you're trying to get people to realize the importance of this and get them back in touch with the natural environment? What forces, other forces, are you fighting? Linda.
I find that most people will agree with me entirely that this is awesome, that it's important. And in fact, for our animal camp, we have a list of so many young people we need to turn away. The other thing is, even students in our program, they grow as much from the program as I think our campers do. But I think our biggest obstacle is meeting all the needs. I mean, I'm one person. We have a few students in the program. We have there's a huge audience out there that would really love this opportunity. Mm-hmm. And there just aren't that many opportunities to experience it.
Have you looked into replicating this, Taproot or the animal camp?
Oh, Taproots, I read about you on the internet. You're awesome.
Thank you.
I'm jealous.
So there's a need out there. There's a lot of demand. We're not meeting the need. So maybe looking at how this can be replicated and lessons can be learned all across the board. Yeah.
Well, and I think what Taproots does, as well as what we're doing, is a little bit different from just naturalistic education. When you talk about free time in the natural environment being so important, it really, really is. It's not learning facts and figures about hawks and owls and things like that.
Those come, though. Those come naturally. You can't plan them.
You plant the seed of love for the environment, mm-hmm. and then they want to know about it.
Right. And we are as a society, in sort of uncharted territory. Mm-hmm. Zach, you're Linda, I grew up in Cedar Falls, too. I remember, having it to be sort of a strange feeling to put shoes on at the end of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
and I remember going outdoors and really having only one reason to come back home, and that was because I was hungry if the neighbors weren't feeding mm-hmm. me.
Right.
And life is completely different now,
way
isn't
different.
It is. I wanted to mention, I was overjoyed to hear about the Ames High School Prairie because I spend a large part of my elementary age days in Ames, close to the Ames High School, and took a summer field biology course. And I don't know if it was with Mike Todd. I can't remember the name of the teacher. But that summer field biology course in that prairie was awesome and definitely was formative. And then the time I spent there, there's a pine forest and lots of wild areas around mm-hmm. the high school, and spent hours there.
We've talked primarily about childhood and children, but I know Zach Wiedemeyer at Taproot, you offer programs for adults here. What can this offer us as adults?
Oh, I think adults have a yearning to be connected with nature as well. One of the obstacles to getting adults involved, you almost have to have their children involved too, because these days adults, as demanding as they are of their children, they're even more demanding of themselves, and it's difficult to get adults to do something that they feel is nice for themselves. Mm-hmm. So our adult programming has been difficult to get off the ground. We're focusing more on children now and adults with their children.
Linda Nebby, have you seen transformations in adults as well?
Oh, our students are generally between 22 and, who knows where. But when they write up their summaries at the end of the experience and things, they say, we're the ones that grew. Hey, we'd never done things like this before. I didn't know if I would even like being outdoors. And then I see the students going off and actually replicating some of the things we're doing in their work when they're school counselors, which is really thrilling.
We have just a minute left. I wanted to, since we're right ahead of a weekend, to give us some concrete ideas about what we might do to get outdoors with kids, to enjoy nature in a different way. And it probably doesn't count to witness the yearly battle in the Wild Kingdom between the Cyclones and the Hawkeyes, does it?
You're going to have a hard time getting some of the parents out.
You've got any good ideas of what to do outdoors, Linda, that might not occur to us?
Well, one of the things we love to do, and it's semi-structured, is just a group of people and do something as a simple scavenger hunt. Look for the biggest leaf you can find. Look for the oldest thing that's in the prairie or the woods. Look for the youngest thing that you can find. Come up with some objects like that, and you'll spend all day finding the biggest leaf and the bigger leaf and the biggest of all leaves.
Good idea.
Out there. You don't have to name anything. You can just have fun looking and exploring.
Okay, we have 30 seconds. Zach Wiedemeyer, for your concrete idea of what we can do with our weekend.
Oh, I love the idea of going out with your family and finding beautiful things, finding treasures and acorns and leaves, and then putting them together, either outside or bringing them home into something pleasing, some piece of artwork.
Okay.
It's a great way to
Wonderful contact. To have you both with us this hour. The hour's up. Professor Linda Nebbe, thank you very much, of the University of Northern Iowa, author of Nature as a Guide, Nature in Counseling, Therapy, and Education, a certified wildlife rehabilitator. We didn't even get to talk to that. We'll have to, we'll have to talk about that at another time.
Okay.
Linda Nebbe, thank you very much. Zach Wiedemeyer of Taproot Nature Experience. Find out more by going to taprootnatureexperience.org. Zach, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. Technical support from Dennis Reese. In Ames, we had help from Colin Oraskovich. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio available. Perhaps you heard part of this hour, but if you want to hear the entire hour, go to iowapublicradio.org. We always welcome your comments and questions. Drop us a line. TheExchange@iowapublicradio.org is our email. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Have a great weekend, and thanks for joining us.